is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Joe Biden is making the case for more U.S. military aid to both Israel and Ukraine. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani tells us more.
It's natural to ask, why does this matter to America?
In a rare Oval Office address, the president said if the U.S. lets either Vladimir Putin or Hamas get away with their tyranny and terror,
would-be aggressors around the world be emboldened to try the same. The risk of conflict and chaos could spread in other parts of the world.
Stopping that is vital to American national security, so the president will ask Congress to send the two nations billions more in aid.
It's a smart investment that's going to pay dividends for American security for generations.
But getting Congress's sign-off won't be easy. With the House in chaos, conservatives against more aid for Ukraine, and bipartisan backing for Israel dropping in recent years. Sagar Magani at the White House.
China on Thursday said it is deeply disappointed in the U.S. for blocking a U.N. resolution that would have condemned all violence against civilians in the Israel-Hamas war. VOA's Kim Lewis.
The U.S. the resolution on Wednesday, saying it was too early to craft an appropriate Security Council response to the crisis. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Mao Ning commented on the matter at a daily news briefing, calling on the UN Security Council to heed the calls of Palestinian people and Arab countries and play its role in promoting a ceasefire. The resolution sponsored by Brazil had wide support and would have condemned all violence against civilians, including the heinous terrorist attacks by Hamas against Israel. Kim Lewis, VOA News.
An Army private who fled to North Korea before being returned home to the United States earlier this month has been detained by the U.S. military. That's according to two officials. The officials say that King was facing charges including desertion and possessing sexual images as a child or of a child. This is VOA News. Ukraine is desperately short of judges and is now kickstarting a nationwide hiring spree to fill more than 2,000 vacancies and vet around as many as sitting judges for potential misconduct. Reforming the judiciary even while the country is at war is a requirement if it's still to join the European Union one day. Reuters' Lucy Fielder reports.
Two bodies responsible for hiring and disciplining judges were effectively frozen for years and only recently relaunched under EU pressure. On top of hiring new ones, Ukraine must vet 2,000 or so sitting judges for misconduct. Endemic corruption means few Ukrainians trust the courts. Ludmila Volkova is on the commission tasked with both new hires and integrity checks.
Those who keep their posts, whose competence we confirm, will shape the new era of judicial power in Ukraine.
The judiciary overhaul is part of a broader crackdown on corruption.
That is Reuters' Lucy Fielder reporting. The focus at former U.S. President Donald Trump's civil trial in New York is his son's, Eric's, valuation of the property there. APs Ed Donahue.
Documents and testimony suggest Eric Trump envisioned a lofty value on New York's Trump National Golf Club. The family business wanted to build luxury townhouses there. The claims in the trial are Trump, his company, and executives, including Eric Trump, fraudulently inflated the value of properties on financial statements. An appraiser testified Trump's son had lofty ideas and may have felt the appraisal of the golf club was too low, but said a higher number would not have been credible. The former president and 2024 Republican presidential frontrunner denies the allegations and says the documents in question actually underestimate the value of his prime properties. I'm Ed Donahue.
A Brazilian congressional panel has accused former Brazilian president Jair Bolsonaro of instigating the country's January 8th riots and recommended that he be charged with attempting to stage a coup. The inquiry has been conducted by a panel of lawmakers, mostly allied with the current leftist president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, who narrowly defeated Bolsonaro in last fall's election. They voted 20-11 to adopt the damning report drafted by a senator. The move is largely symbolic because law enforcement officials already are investigating Bolsonaro's possible role in inciting the uprising. Bolsonaro has denied involvement in the rioting. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, October 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Biden addresses Americans on the need for billions of dollars for Israel and Ukraine.
We cannot and will not let terrorists like Hamas and tyrants like Putin win. I refuse to let that happen.
We have analysis of the president's speech. U.S. Navy ship downs missiles launched from Yemen. Egypt has so far refused to open its border to Palestinians fleeing Gaza. Liberia's main opposition leader calls for unity ahead of likely runoff elections.
One thing I know very well is that all the talents and ideas we need to build our country cannot be found in any single party. That's why I am committed to forming a government of inclusion.
And Zimbabwe's disputed August election results continue to haunt the nation as the main opposition plans to demonstrate. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Joe Biden has appealed to the American people to continue funding Ukraine and Israel amid their war efforts. The appeal comes after Biden flew to Tel Aviv on Wednesday, pledging his support for Israel in the wake of the sprawling attack carried out by Hamas militants this month. VOA's Douglas Umpuga listened to the president's speech and has the details.
In an address Thursday, only a second from the Oval Office, President Joe Biden said that supporting Ukraine and Israel is a matter of U.S. national security when the world is at an inflection point.
I know these conflicts can seem far away. And it's natural to ask, why does this matter to America? So let me share with you why making sure Israel and Ukraine succeed is vital for America's national security. You know, history has taught us that when terrorists don't pay a price for their terror, when dictators don't pay a price for their aggression, they cause more chaos and death and more destruction. They keep going, and the cost and the threats to America and the world keep rising.
The president said he's requesting $100 billion from Congress to deliver aid and resources to Ukraine and Israel. The U.S., Egypt, and Israel have all signaled readiness for aid to begin moving into Gaza following Biden's high-profile visit.
That's why tomorrow I'm going to send to Congress an urgent budget request to fund America's national security needs, to support our critical partners, including Israel and Ukraine. It's a smart investment that's going to pay dividends for American security for generations, help us keep American troops out of harm's way, help us build a world that is safer, more peaceful, more prosperous for our children and grandchildren.
The Biden administration in August delivered its last supplemental funding request. The proposal requested $24.1 billion to aid Ukraine through the end of the year, but Congress failed to approve it during a process to greenlight short-term federal funding. Now Congress has been paralyzed for over 2 weeks without an elected House Speaker. Douglas Impuga for VOA News, Washington.
A former U.S. diplomat says he's proud, as an American, of President Joe Biden's Thursday night speech on the Israel-Hamas conflict, as well as Russia's war in Ukraine and the need for the United States to be engaged morally and financially. Herman J. Cohen serves as U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs under President George H.W. Bush. He tells me that the two conflicts not only impact the U.S., but Africa as well. Thank you so much, Ambassador Cohen. Welcome to Daybreak Africa.
Thank you very much.
Let me first give you time to reflect on what the president said.
Well, I believe he was telling the American people that we have two very close, friendly countries out there who are living under the threat of aggression from elsewhere. These countries are Ukraine and Israel. And he told the American people that we will not abandon these countries. We will help provide the necessary ammunition and arms that they need to protect themselves. And I believe this is a very courageous statement. Generally speaking, the American people don't like to go into danger zones overseas, and they're reluctant to make commitments overseas. But the president made a very courageous statement that we will support our friends. We will support our friends in Ukraine. We will support our friends in Israel. And I feel this was a very, very, very good, courageous statement, and I'm proud of him as my president.
Ambassador Cohen, how do you think these two conflicts, Israel, Hamas, or Palestine, and then Ukraine, Russia, how do they impact Africa?
Well, they impact Africa. For example, Ukraine supplies very much of the cereals that Africa consumes. Ukraine is a big exporter to Africa. So if Ukraine is unable to provide these grains, that makes it difficult for the African people to have the nourishment that they want. And Israel, of course, has done a great deal of good things in Africa. For example, the drip irrigation and all sorts of things in the health field. So both of these countries are doing good things for Africa. And I believe that we should help them by providing. In fact, I believe that President Biden is going to send a budget to Washington tomorrow to provide significant assistance to both Ukraine and Israel.
Before I let you go, Ambassador Cohen, the issue of Israeli-Palestinian conflict, you as a former diplomat, is there a resolution to the conflict?
It's very, very difficult because there's so much history of hate. But I think the resolution is, as President Biden has said, is a two-state solution. Israel has a state. The Palestinian people are a people. They deserve self-determination. They deserve a right to have their own government. So I believe in the two-state solution. And the sooner this can be negotiated, the better it is will be for both the Palestinian and the Israeli people.
Ambassador Cohen, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for calling on me.
Hiram J. Cohen is the former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs under President George H.W. Bush. He was speaking with us from Washington, D.C. The U.S. Navy has shot down cruise missiles and drones launched from Yemen that might have been targeted Israel. Details from VOA's Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman in Washington.
Three land attack cruise missiles and several drones were brought down Thursday by the USS Kearney operating in the northern Red Sea. Pentagon Press Secretary Brigadier General Pat Ryder says the missiles and drones were launched by Iran-backed Houthi forces in Yemen and were believed to be on a trajectory toward Israel.
This action was a demonstration of the integrated air and missile defense architecture that we have built in the Middle East and that we are prepared to utilize whenever necessary to protect our partners and our interests in this important region.
Israeli media quoted officials there saying the missiles and drones from Yemen did appear to be targeting Israel. The United States has repeatedly warned Iran, which has proxy forces in Yemen, Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon, not to widen the current war between Israel and Hamas, which runs the Gaza Strip. In the past week, the Pentagon has boosted its presence in the Middle East region with additional naval power, fighter jets, and about 2,000 Marines. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Egypt has so far refused to open its border to Palestinians fleeing Israel's bombardment of the Gaza Strip following the October 7 attack by Hamas militants on civilians and soldiers in southern Israel. As Henry Richwell reports, Egypt is wary of allowing thousands of refugees to cross the border.
Thousands of tons of aid are waiting on Egypt's border with Gaza as conditions for Palestinians worsen by the hour. Just across the frontier, in the city of Rafah and across the Gaza Strip, civilians continue to pay the price for Hamas's attack on Israel and the Israeli military's response. Egypt, for now, is not allowing Palestinians to cross the border to escape Gaza into the relative safety of Egypt's Sinai Peninsula.
Transferring Palestinian citizens from the Gaza Strip to Sinai very simply means that we are transferring the idea of resistance, the idea of fighting from the Gaza Strip to Sinai, and thus Sinai becomes a base for launching operations against Israel.
Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians fled their lands in past conflicts with Israel. Many have never been allowed to return. Egypt and much of the Arab world fears the consequences of Palestinians once again fleeing Gaza, says analyst Chris Doyle of the Council for Arab-British Understanding.
It does not want to land up hosting hundreds of thousands of Palestinian civilians in the Sinai in a tented city with really quite a clear agenda, certainly on the Israeli right, that that becomes the permanent solution, that Palestinians and Egyptians are aware of this, are fearful that what happened to them in 1948 and 1967, when they fled in fear or were kicked out, will happen to them again. They're talking about a second Nakba, a catastrophe.
As in many cities across the Arab world, Egyptians have taken to the streets to denounce Israel's bombardment of Gaza.
We're seeing a lot of anger right now, you know, in Egypt about what's going on. So they'll be wary of being seen to be somehow supporting Israeli actions at this moment, even though in private they are very critical of Hamas as well.
Egypt's president seized power in a 2013 military coup, ousting the democratically elected Muslim Brotherhood government.
Let's not forget that Hamas is an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood. And the more we see death among civilians, Palestinian civilians, the more people will go probably to the street, and it can really inflame the political situation in Egypt. And that's why it's actually the Egyptian interest to mediate a ceasefire and mediate quickly.
While Egypt has dialogue with Hamas, it is also able to talk to Israel.
Strategically, there is great understanding between Israel and Egypt over the last 10, 11 years. And the other side, for Israel, is a convenient neighbor. Because what is the alternative? The Muslim Brotherhood, this is definitely not something that Israel would like.
For now, analysts say Israel does not appear ready for mediation from any regional power as it seeks the eradication of Hamas in the Gaza Strip. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, October 20th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. As Liberians prepare for a possible runoff election next month, the main candidate of the opposition Unity Party, former Vice President Joseph Boakai, has called for the country to come together. Dennis Nipsey has more from Monrovia.
The National Elections Commission, known as NEC, Thursday announced results covering 99.97% of total votes from the country's October 10 election. Incumbent President George Weah of the Coalition for Democratic Change, CDC, received 43.84%, and former Vice President Joseph Boakai of the Unity Party has 43.34%. This indicates that neither of the candidates may obtain the 50+1 needed to emerge a winner as required by the Constitution of Liberia. This means Liberians will have a runoff election on November 7. Addressing his supporters Thursday in a thank you message, UP standard bearer Ambassador Boakai said the slim margin between him and incumbent Weah is a manifestation that Liberians are set to make Weah a one-term president.
As it is now evident from the result of the presidential elections announced by the Electoral Commission body, the National Election Commission, NEC, the Liberian people, in their righteous rage, have served President Weah a clear warning that his days of presidency are numbered, and very soon the final verdict
Boakai said that in order for the country to develop, Liberians will need to work together.
To achieve these lofty goals, as I've always argued, we need all hands. One thing I know very well is that all the talents and ideas we need to build our country cannot be found in any single party, tribe, county, religion, or region. That's why I am committed to forming a government of inclusion.
Lawrence Yelu is the executive director of Accountability Lab Liberia, a global network that supports civic action teams to promote transparency, accountability, and social change. He says Bwaka's message of inclusion is welcoming.
From the beginning, it was more Chori or Jav as the ruling establishment. And then I just thought his call for inclusion is something that every Liberian union, for I think he talked more about, is one form of government of inclusion, of competence, and you know, across regions. That call, if translated into governance, could be better for the country.
Meanwhile, Liberians remain hopeful for a better future as they await the National Elections Commission to declare a presidential election runoff. For VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nipson in Monrovia, Liberia.
The main opposition party in Zimbabwe, Citizens Coalition for Change, also known as CCC, says it will embark on nationwide demonstrations to express its discontent over the August polls it describes as not free, fair, and credible. Rutendo Manweri has more from Harare.
Addressing the media in Harare Wednesday, the deputy spokesperson for the Citizens Coalition for Change, CCC, or Stalos Gifty Siziba, says disgruntled Zimbabweans will be taking to the streets.
The current government in its composition has no mandate from the people, and Zimbabweans across continue to organize, because it's not a partisan issue, it's not a CCC issue. Zimbabweans have the Section 59 of the Zimbabwean Constitution, giving Zimbabweans the right to peacefully express themselves against this displeasure of what transpired on the 23rd of August 2023.
Section 59 of the Zimbabwe Constitution gives citizens the right to demonstrate and petition. The CCC has continued with its calls for fresh polls run by a non-partisan body, with the party alleging that the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission failed to hold a credible vote. Farai Marapira is the acting director of information for the ruling ZANU-PF party.
The CCC has got a right to engage in any activities it so chooses, as long as they're within the purview of the law. So they're free to do anything they want, as long as it is legal.
However, Foreign Affairs Minister Aaron Murwira suggested in a short briefing to African ambassadors that protesters would be punished.
As in previous instances, government will not tolerate any actions aimed at disturbing the peace under the guise of democratic political processes.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission declared Mnangagwa winner of the August presidential poll with 52.6% of the vote, while the leader of the opposition, CCC, is said to have earned 44%. The opposition rejected the results and are demanding fresh polls. Several observer missions said the polls were compromised by irregularities, including groups from the Southern African Development Community, the African Union, COMESA, the European Union, the Commonwealth, and the U.S. Some of the observers also say voters were intimidated by Forever Associates of Zimbabwe, a shadowy group affiliated with the ruling party that was conducting exit surveys as people voted. Authorities say the group did not break any laws. Reporting for VOA Africa, this is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
China's President Xi Jinping pledged on Thursday for his country to increase investments in Nigeria's power generation sector and its digital economy, the Nigerian Vice President's office said in the wake of a Belt and Road Initiative Forum in Beijing. Nigeria's National Agency for Science and Engineering Infrastructure and three Chinese partners signed contracts for new projects valued at $2 billion, Vice President Kashim Shitema's office said. It is time now for Daybreak Africa's posting. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with Africa's most eagerly anticipated competition, the Africa Football League, which will kick off in Dar es Salaam, the capital of Tanzania, on Friday.
8 of Africa's most famous and iconic clubs will compete for the grand prize of $4 million, which goes to the winners of the inaugural Africa Football League tournament, raising the stakes considerably in a tournament that brings an exciting new African football product to the world football calendar. The opening match on Friday between perennial Tanzanian champions Simba SC and 11-time African champions from Cairo, Al Ahly, will kick off at the Benjamin Mkapa Stadium in Dar es Salaam. On Saturday, 16-time Angolan champions Atletico Petroleros de Luanda will host South Africa's Mamelodi Sundowns. The winners of the last six South African domestic league titles in a row at the Luanda's Estadio 11 do Novembro. On Sunday, it will be the turn of the Democratic Republic of Congo champions TP Mazembe, which will host Tunisian giant Esperance at the Dar es Salaam Benjamin Mkapa Stadium. In the last of the tournament's mouth-watering opening weekend games, we'll see Nigerian powerhouse Enyimba FC, whose legendary Moroccan champions Wydad Athletic Club at the Uyo's Gosul Akpabio Stadium on Sunday. The eight teams will play in a knockout format consisting of a quarterfinal, semifinal, and final. And now to rugby news. The Royal Moroccan Rugby Federation has officially been reinstated as a full member of Rugby Africa, allowing the nation to return to continental competition. The decision was unanimously taken by members of the Rugby Africa Executive Committee at a meeting in Cape Town. Morocco has been barred from participating in international competition since 2020, when the Royal Moroccan Rugby Federation suspension came into effect, as well as the organization being banned by World Rugby. Former FRMR president Tahar Boujoulla was suspended for 5 years. The punishment was issued following the controversial election. The punishment was issued following the controversial election of Driss Boujoulla, the brother of Tahar Boujoulla, as the head of the Royal Moroccan Rugby Federation. Staying with rugby news, South Africa coach Jack Ninamba has named an unchanged match day 23 squad, the most experienced in Springboks history, from the one that edged France to play England in the World Cup semi-final in Paris on Saturday. 8 of the Springboks starting 15 began the win over England in the World Cup final in Japan 4 years ago. The Springboks beat host France 29-28 in an epic quarterfinal last Sunday. The winner of the match on Saturday will play either Argentina or New Zealand in the final of the World Rugby World Cup at the Stade de France on Saturday, the 28th of October. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, October 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.
We're bringing women's voices to the conversation on things that matter to hearts and minds of women.
Here in Kinshasa, campaigns to raise awareness against the spread of coronavirus are common, but getting that information to people who have no access to water, electricity, or money can be a challenge.
With strong opinions and expertise on things that impact and change their lives.
I think a big thing for me is just being able to say that when these protests are happening, does it turn around into policy?
From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent.
It really was powerful because it showed what is possible when men and women band together and say enough is enough.
We hear your voices, women's voices, our voices, and add your voice to the conversation. Each week, right here on The Voice of America.